You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. And yes, that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we break form and focus on UFC 155, this past weekend's MMA show that featured a battle for the heavyweight title between champion Junior Dos Santos and challenger Cain Velasquez. My name is David, and I'm joined, as always, by my good friend Alex. How you doing, bud?
Right now I'm watching the Tostitas Fiesta Bowl, Oregon against Kansas State. And can't we all wish the job interviews would go this well? Chip Kelly, who's definitely an NFL prospect coach, his Oregon team is rolling. And he's obviously going to get a lot of big NFL offers. So don't we all wish job interviews could go this well?
Yeah, and there are plenty of openings in the NFL. Unfortunately, what, seven coaches got fired?
Absolutely. And generally it doesn't happen quite to the number, but yeah, definitely a lot of teams moving in a different direction and seemingly not enough coaches to fill the vacancies. This will be an interesting offseason in the NFL.
You know, real quick, that's an interesting point because a lot of teams are real quick to get rid of their coach, and there may not be a lot of coaches out there that they want to take their place. I mean, that's one thing I think that my Cowboys are dealing with. I don't know if they're in love with Jason Garrett, but who else is out there?
Absolutely. I mean, you want to have the right guy that can build for a long time. I think it's shown that the sexy hire isn't always going to win you big immediately or even in the long run. You want a guy who's going to be invested in your team. And, you know, those guys are hit and miss. Even the Steelers this year didn't make the playoffs, and the Steelers very rarely do things wrong in management. So it'll be interesting to see this offseason definitely with all the new hires.
And you're talking about the festival tonight. I turned it on earlier, and I sat down, and it was 8-0 before I even, you know, could blink.
Kansas State style play kind of fits in with Oregon style play, but Oregon's been a little bit faster. But definitely a game I've been anxiously awaiting for. Hey, David, listen, the big fight is very exciting, whether it be in football, pro wrestling, or like we'll talk about tonight in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, and that's why I thought this was a great opportunity to talk about UFC, because I know you're a big fan, and this was a big show, but also even more special because you and your wife went to Las Vegas.
Absolutely. I became a UFC fan shortly after World Wrestling Federation at the time hired Ken Shamrock and Dan Severin on the active roster. And to build the guys coming in, they actually were able to get rights to UFC footage, which today would be unheard of. But UFC at the time was a struggling company in 2001 when I became a fan. And they would show clips of, at the time, this bloody fight between Dan Severin and Ken Shamrock. And I said, you know what? I'm under 18, but I'm going to risk it and go to Hollywood Video and rent the Ultimate Fighting Championship tapes. Because at the time, you had to be over 18 to rent them. And the first one I rented was UFC 6, and I was introduced to such characters as Tank Abbott, Oleg Taktarov, Ken Shamrock, Dan Severn were also in the tournament. And from then on, I got my hands on as much UFC as I could. And this weekend, my wife and I were able to attend UFC 155. During the summer, we were also able to attend UFC 148, which holds the mixed martial arts gate record in Las Vegas for the highest grossing gate at an MMA event. That was, of course, Chael Sonnen versus Anderson Silva II. But this Cain Velasquez Junior Dos Santos rematch was very important in different ways.
It's very nice, first of all, that you're able to share this with your wife. Is she a big fan as well, or does she just kind of go along for the glitz and glamour of Vegas?
Hey, listen, right now I make fun of her all the time because during a lot of the big fights years past, she would fall asleep. But just like in pro wrestling, you begin to fall in love with some of the characters. But this weekend, we had the opportunity at a meet and greet to talk to Michael Bisping, who's one of the bigger stars of the UFC. He won the Ultimate Fighter 3 television show. And my wife was able to tell him that, look, listen, UFC did a profile on you on the the Fuel TV show, where it showed you training, and it also showed you going home and meeting your kids. And while some people think that stuff is hokey, that's the kind of stuff that got my wife to buy it as a fan. And now my wife is a very big fan of the Count Michael Bisping and is looking forward to rooting him on in January as he faces Vitor Belfort for the number one contendership for the 185 title. Mm-hmm. So it's about the stories, you know, at the end of the day, because literally you can turn it on to almost any channel. Even now I have DirecTV, there's regional fighting on. If you like fighting, there's plenty of it on. But UFC, they have big characters, big stories, and I think that's part of the reason why fans keep coming back.
I agree completely with what you said earlier about the big fight feel, whether we're talking about the Fiesta Bowl tonight, whether we're talking about the UFC event you just went to, whether we're talking about WrestleMania coming up. We like that, don't we, as fans? And that is something, whether it's your wife or yourself, that is attractive, the storyline surrounding it, and pulls you in. You've been to a few now, in Vegas specifically.
The big fight feel isn't, you know, it's a lot of times it's manufactured, but, I mean, that's the job of a promoter, is to make you feel like this is a big fight going into it. UFC 148 was a perfect example. Anderson Silva was the dominant champion over a year's time, undefeated in the UFC, and he was going against Chael Sonnen, who Chael Sonnen was able to show a chink in the armor of Anderson Silva,
mm-hmm.
even though he lost in the last minute, I believe, of the fight. And the rematch at UFC 148, Chael didn't go in as the favorite. He went in as a strong underdog. But the fact is even though you knew that Anderson Silva's style was incredible and Chael was very limited, but Chael did almost beat him last time. So, like I said, that broke the Las Vegas Mixed Martial Arts Gate record. It was a fight a lot of people were anticipating, and it definitely had that big fight feel, even though the books had Anderson as a strong favorite.
You said that you've been watching for quite a while now, and it started by watching a lot of those old videotapes. Explain some of the difference, Alex, between what UFC shows were like back then and what they're like now. I mean, it seems like there's a lot more of the pro wrestling element in them now.
You know, I mean, when people say the pro wrestling element, it's such a dirty word to mixed martial arts fans because initially, I mean, it was the tournament format, who's the toughest guy. And, you know, Ken Shamrock were stars, you know, but it's hard to have stars fight. It was hard to promote stars during that time. So they developed the super fight title, which was a single fight in one night. But also they had the tournament format, which did create a lot of stars. But it was, they faced difficulty. In the beginning, they didn't have regulations through states. So they adapted it to more of the single fight format. They introduced a lot of rules throughout the process of this. And, today, as we see it, is, a very exciting sport with a lot of big stars and many different weight classes. And it is quite evolved from UFC 1 or even UFC 6, which was the first one I ever saw.
In your opinion, has mixed martial arts surpassed boxing in popularity?
No. I mean, I believe it's different genres. It's just like college football to NFL, but not in the way that college football is inferior to the NFL. It just has different fan bases who watch for different reasons. I mean, I watched the Manny Pacquiao, Juan Manuel Marquez fight on HBO recently, and man, those fights are a big deal. Presidential runner-up Governor Mitt Romney was in the front row. I mean, we had Anthony Kiedis and MC Hammer in the front row of the UFC show, which is a big deal. But Governor Mitt Romney was in the front row of the boxing fight. And it attracts a different audience. It has a different feel to it. And maybe one day UFC can get that, but it's different. And not bad different, it's just different.
I'll tell you, I've always loved pay-per-view. I guess it's because when I was a kid, pay-per-view was just starting, and my parents would never buy it for me. And so I always was like, man, one day I'm going to have a job, Alex, and I'm going to be able to buy my own damn pay-per-views, you know? Yeah, I really shot for the stars, didn't I? But, but I will be, in all sincerity, I am not willing to buy boxing pay-per-views now because usually there's three fights on the show. I don't really know the undercard. And even the main event, you're not guaranteed of anything. You know, this past Manny Pacquiao fight was sensational theater. But sometimes boxing can really let you down. I will say this about the UFC. I think every pay-per-view I have watched, whether I purchased it, gone to a bar, or gone to a friend's house, has been fantastic because even if the main event isn't a great contest, top to bottom, they put on a great show, and they even fill in then, of course, with preliminary matches if they run a bit short. I think UFC has really, really figured out how to present a pay-per-view.
Dana White took many influences from boxing in his definitely, if it's not his right-hand man, his left-hand man is Booker Joe Silva, is a giant pro wrestling fan. I mean, for example, one of the preliminary bouts, I guess you could call it, was Yushin Okami versus Alan Belcher. And Yushin Okami's nickname is Thunder, which was actually given to him by Joe Silva because he was such a big fan of Thunder, Juice, and Liger. Also, you can consider the lighter weight classes in the UFC, 155 and below, a introduction by Joe Silva because Joe Silva watched Monday Nitro during the boom era, and he loved the junior heavyweight wrestling style. And so he decided, hey, I can bring this to UFC by incorporating smaller weight classes to get that faster athletic style that people enjoy seeing. So, you know, it's interesting that they kind of took influences from both pro wrestling and boxing to kind of honestly present a product that in some ways is superior to both.
I always thought, too, that UFC has the best-looking championship belts around. I mean, their UFC title belts are gorgeous.
They went for class over flash, definitely. You know, the early days of UFC, every time you won a tournament, you got another title belt, and then when you defended your title, you'd win multiple belts. So it became comedy at some points when you would have Frank Shamrock coming out with four belts because he had defended his title four times. And also there was a famous incident at UFC 5 when Dan Severn walked to the ring with his NWA World title belt, and he was actually accompanied by Al Snow that night. So definitely it's interesting that the UFC title has taken on the form it has. It's definitely a classy title, and all the guys wear the same belt, which I think is a very interesting touch. You watch boxing, and my wife and I were watching the Manny Pacquiao Marquez fight, and the title belts to a non-fan, what do they mean? I mean, it seemingly everyone has a title. And I assume if you followed it a little bit closer, you can determine what belts meant what, who was the real champions of what weight class. But Floyd Mayweather has a belt, Pacquiao has a belt. You know, seemingly everyone has titles. So it's a little bit easier to keep up with if you follow UFC. Now, the difference between boxing and UFC is that UFC is a promotion company as compared to, like, Golden Boy is a promotion company for boxing.
Good point.
But sometimes Golden Boy will co-promote with other promotions, and UFC is strictly not in the business to do that. So if you're watching a UFC show, you're watching strictly UFC fighters fight other UFC fighters, as compared to other mixed martial arts companies like Bellator, and now the running their last show this month, Strikeforce.
Yeah.
The guys are contained to one company, and that's one of the striking differences between boxing and MMA, is that in boxing, different promotion companies will have a big fighter, a Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather Jr., and you need two promotions to work together to get the super fight. As where UFCs are able to put together super fights a little more easily, but there are fights the hardcore fans would like to see. But overall, I believe the UFC has the top 1 through 10 top guys in every weight class, as it is anyways.
You mentioned earlier how watching Dan Severn and Tank Abbott and Ken Shamrock, you know, it was exciting, got you into it back then. And, of course, that leads us now, Alex, to Brock Lesnar today, who was in WWE, left, went to UFC and had success there, obviously, came back to WWE. Does this help pro wrestling? Because I kind of felt like when he came back to WWE and I had just seen him get his lights punched out in the octagon, I didn't fear him as much as a wrestling character.
It helps pro wrestling in a way. Lesnar was from a different romanticized era. Quite frankly, Lesnar wasn't, and I've had this conversation with people online before, Lesnar wasn't as important to World Wrestling Entertainment at the time when he was there, but leaving and coming back made him seem a hell of a lot more important because he had been on the big stage. He headlined, pay-per-view-wise, the biggest event UFC ever produced, which was UFC 100. You know, Lesnar came back as a big deal. I don't think any MMA fans started watching pro wrestling when Lesnar came back. And the Lesnar story is kind of unfortunate because you mentioned his last fight where you saw him get beat up. Unfortunately, he was never the same fighter after the diverticulitis shortened his career, in my opinion, in fighting, which was unfortunate because these two heavyweights that fought Saturday night would have destroyed Lesnar, and Cain Velasquez did take the belt away from Brock. But Brock was a special fighter, special athlete, and I don't think he's appreciated enough in the sport of MMA. Some people may try to appreciate him too much, but I think the overall majority don't appreciate him enough.
Well, now, we talked about you and your wife went to Las Vegas for this event at the MGM Grand. By the way, is Las Vegas the best big event city? Isn't it spectacular?
You know, that or New York. I mean, it's definitely up there, though. I mean, the whole town kind of embraces the fight. You know, we also went during New Year's weekend. But a lot of people asked me afterwards about the fight. A lot of people saw me wearing my shirt, asked about the fight. I mean, it's the fight capital of Nevada. It's one of the fight capitals, I guess, of America overall. I don't think you can get the kind of, because it's a small, I mean, when you think of Las Vegas, you essentially think of the Strip, which isn't that big of an area. I mean, it's essentially a long street packed with casinos, and it's where the big fights happen.
Yeah, I love New York City, too, but I feel like Las Vegas is synonymous with sporting events. You know, whereas New York, you know, finance and with Broadway and everything else going on. And New York is an amazing city, too. But I love Las Vegas. I was fortunate to go to a couple boxing shows out there. I just thought it was great. The whole city, like you said, kind of buzzing. And MGM Grand, the actual MGM Grand Garden Arena is not that big, is it?
No, it seats, I don't want to say an amount, but it's not that big of an arena. Great sight lines, really
yeah.
Nice arena. It's definitely one of my favorite ones. UFC is actually this year, they've been trying for years now to try to get mixed martial arts legalized in New York, because New York is the last big state where it's not legal. Because Dana White's ultimate dream is to run an event in Madison Square Garden, which if you were to say there was a second fight mecca, I guess, in the United States,
yeah.
Madison Square Garden would be it. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out throughout this year, and hopefully it becomes legalized soon enough.
What were some of the events that you experienced throughout the weekend? I saw some pictures, Alex, on Facebook of, like, you were at some fans, some signings, and were you at the weigh-ins and everything?
No, unfortunately, I didn't get the opportunity to go to the weigh-ins this time. The weigh-ins generally happen on a Friday night.
Okay.
But the town embraces fighting. I mean, there was signings that my wife and I found out we missed throughout the weekend. But we happened to be getting breakfast one morning, and we saw a line developing. And come to find out, it was Michael the Count Bisping, King Mo, Vinnie Magalese, a couple of named fighters were doing a signing for MMA Elite, had the opportunity to stop and get stuff signed and be able to chat with them. So, you know, if you're in Vegas for a UFC weekend, the fighters definitely make themselves appear for the fans.
Well, it was reported that UFC 155 drew an attendance of about 12,500 for a gate, Alex, of over $3 million. And that would seem to be a success, right?
Absolutely. I don't know where that ranks in the top ones, but yeah, definitely a success. I mean, it was a huge show.
There were 13 UFC fights that night. Of course, we were going to talk about some of the main fights, but as a fan, do you feel like you got your money's worth?
Absolutely. I mean, between the, you know, the pay-per-view card, to be honest, wasn't very exciting. Honestly, the fights didn't turn out very well, but the semi-main and the main event were, I believe that the semi-main was one of the top fights of the year, and the main event, I believe, was one of the top five important heavyweight title fights in UFC history, one of the biggest probably 10 or 15 fights in UFC history, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll certainly talk about those in more in-depth here in a second. Just a few more questions. I saw that some of the fights were broadcast on FX, which is typical, right? They take some of the mid-card, show it before the pay-per-view. But, Alex, I saw that some were broadcast on Facebook. Is that right? I mean, it said on Wikipedia that some of the shows were broadcast on Facebook. Did I get that wrong?
Well, I mean, generally, maybe the first couple of fights are going to be broadcast on Facebook.
What does that mean, though? What do you mean broadcast on Facebook? I don't understand that.
If you like the UFC fan page, you get access to a link to let you watch the show live on your computer.
Oh.
It's them tinkering, I guess, with future technology. World Wrestling Entertainment does, at least at one point, they did a similar thing. I know now you still watch the undercard stuff on YouTube. Yeah, it's just them, you know, doing a little deal for Facebook. I mean, honestly, there are never fights that are going to greatly impact the future of the UFC, but sometimes there's some good fighters, and sometimes you might even get a name fighter.
Before we look at the primary matchups, were there any stars on the undercard that really grabbed your attention?
There was, between the Facebook and the FX fights you're talking about?
Yes.
Well, first of all, Jamie Varner defeated Melvin Gillard. And that's important because Jamie Varner was just brought back to the UFC this summer after being cut after a few one or two lackluster fights. He has a new energy. The fight wasn't as to be expected. These guys kind of had a little bit of heat at the weigh-ins. They were supposed to fight 2 weeks ago, but Jamie Varner was sick in the middle of his weight cut. They had to cancel the fight. But Varner continues the win. Todd Duffy returned to defeat Phil DeFries. This is how sometimes you can get reborn in the UFC, is you get cut for whatever reason, and then you pay your time on the independent MMA circuit, and then someone will undoubtedly get injured, and then when the UFC calls you, you show up, you make weight, and if you win your fight, then you're automatically catapulted. And Todd Duffy with an impressive knockout at 2 minutes and 4 seconds of the first round to Phil DeFries. Definitely you'll see some things for the future of Todd Duffy. Eric Perez defeating Byron Bloodworth. UFC is going into this big marketing campaign for Eric Perez. Dana White has read the history of Lucha Libre and the importance of the mask in Mexico, and UFC has come out with officially licensed masks for Eric Perez. Eric Perez is a Mexican-born man who has since immigrated to America, and they're definitely embracing the Latino fan base by promoting Eric Perez. And it looked impressive defeating Byron Bloodworth round one and 350 in. Eddie Wineland, who's had a couple of losses to Joseph Benavidez and Uriah Faber, has come back and beat Scott Jorgensen a few months ago. And on this show, he defeated Brad Pickett, who's a very exciting fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And Eddie Wineland, he's definitely on track to maybe get a title shot at 145 in the future, or definitely one of the top guys. And that's basically the skinny and the long of the undercard. The undercard was very, very good up into FX broadcast. Very, very good. Now, when we get into this pay-per-view, a few of these fights are pretty terrible, but the undercard was a good show.
Well, let's turn our attention to the featured matches. Of course, the main event, Cain Velasquez defeating the heavyweight champion Junior Dos Santos by a decision to win the UFC title, went 5 rounds. And tell us about the buzz for that world heavyweight title match.
What's interesting is that if you're a gambling person, I mean, you could get Cain at a strong underdog. I mean, Vegas and the people would kind of turn their back on Cain Velasquez. For those who don't know, last November these guys fought, and Junior Dos Santos knocked out Cain Velasquez with one punch, ending what was looking like a promising title heavyweight run of Cain Velasquez. Cain Velasquez returned this past May to fight Bigfoot Silva and utterly destroyed him, thus setting up this big fight.
Mm-hmm.
It was rumored that Junior's next offense was going to be against Alistair Overeem, but Overeem took himself out of the picture when he failed a drug test.
Right.
And these two guys fought. These two guys are the baddest heavyweights in the world. If you want to put Alistair on that list, I guess you could. But these two men are bad. Cain Velasquez's life has been greatly affected because he trains at the American Kickboxing Academy. And a few years ago, they had a new student/coach show up named Daniel Cormier, who happened to be the 2004 and 2008 U.S. Olympic wrestling captain for the United States team. And Cain Velasquez, who was already a solid wrestler, wrestled at Arizona State. He got under the tutelage, I guess, of Daniel Cormier, who's a name that UFC fans will become accustomed to, Strikeforce heavyweight, incredible fighter in his own right. Cain has improved his wrestling greatly by training with Daniel Cormier. Cain has an incredible gas tank, and a lot of people predicted that if he were to beat Junior, he'd have to take him down and control him. Junior had this reputation of being able to be taken down but standing right back up, and that's exactly what we saw in this fight. And if I would have told anyone that going in, you would have thought easy night for Junior. But Cain kept the pressure on, kept putting punches in, mm-hmm. eventually cracking the shield of the champion. Incredible gutsy fight by both combatants. Junior wouldn't stop, wouldn't give up, but Cain was too much for him on this night. Cain Velasquez won a unanimous decision. On some scorecards, he got a couple of 10-8s, which 10-8, wow. That's when you know you get beat up. The scores were 50-45, 50-43, 50-44. Junior afterwards vowed that he wants his title back, so Junior will probably have to fight one more time. We may see a Cain Velasquez-Alistair Overeem fight, depending on if Alistair can beat Bigfoot Silva at the January pay-per-view. And we could easily see a rematch of this fight next December, Dave. The third one would be just completely epic if this one wasn't big enough.
Well, it certainly sounds like the match is up to your expectations, especially because as a paying customer, I read, Alex, this was the first UFC heavyweight championship fight to go to a decision since Randy Couture versus Tim Sylvia in March of 2007. So getting five full rounds, that'd be fantastic.
Absolutely, and I mean, I don't know what the other two fights are, but if I were to name the top three off the top of my head important fights in UFC history, it would be Randy Couture returning to the company to fight Tim Sylvia after Sylvia had a stranglehold of the UFC division. At the time, the heavyweights weren't very good, and honestly, it was the worst division in UFC history. Mm. And between Andre Arlovski and Tim Sylvia, just lack of talent, in my opinion. And Randy Couture came in and kind of shook the whole heavyweight division up, coming back and winning the title, I believe, for the third time. Incredible night in Columbus, Ohio. The second fight happened in Las Vegas. That'd be UFC 100, Brock Lesnar versus Frank Mir II, the rematch. Such a big fight. For pro wrestling fans, I think we can all remember the build when Frank Mir, during his training, had one of his training partners dress up like Brock Lesnar. And I believe that Frank might throw a punch or a kick, and he took a big bump, and he looks in the camera and said, "This ain't pro wrestling, Brock. I'm going to beat you." Such an incredible build to this fight, and definitely this past Saturday, Junior Santos and Cain Velasquez is up there on my list of most important heavyweight fights in UFC history, and like I said, probably top 20 of the company of all time.
I read that Velasquez has successfully completed 27 takedowns now in his 10-fight UFC career, the most in UFC heavyweight history. There's all kinds of other statistics out there about how impressive this guy is. Alex, what's his place in history?
You know, it's still being written. And that's something else I want to say is that I've noticed it a lot this year, is that you're seeing the incorporation of more metrics into the mixed martial arts scene, and I don't know how many of the metrics are really effective as of yet, but the metrics are coming in, and so when they're able to analyze fights better using numbers, it'll be interesting to see how that changes this sport, like it's changed, in my opinion, every other sport. So it'll be interesting to see what that does. But yeah, the Kane story is still being written. An incredible prospect, to say the least, who was able to successfully win the title, but unfortunately lost it in his first defense. Now he regained the title, and we'll see what he can do with it this time. But, I mean, I would put him top one and two, with Junior being number two of the top heavyweights to maybe ever compete in the UFC.
Wow.
That's pretty big statement for a guy who I believe is still carving out his legacy.
Mm-hmm. Now, there were, of course, some other excellent matches on the card. You talked about the semi-main being outstanding, and I've read that it may have been a fight of the year candidate. Jim Miller defeating Joe Lauzon by a decision, a matchup of submission artists in the lightweight division. Got a little bloody. I heard the crowd loved this match. Tell me about it.
Jim Miller versus Joe Lauzon, two 155-pound fighters. Jim Miller was on his way to a UFC title shot. I believe he won four or five fights in a row, but unfortunately due to timing, couldn't get a title shot. But the guy loves to fight. He and his brother are nicknamed the Fighting Miller Brothers because his brother Dan Miller is also under UFC contract. And these two guys will take a fight on any time's notice. A story that's sure to grip your heart, Dan Miller, this past year, his son was born with complications. I don't remember off the top of my head what they were, but the kid struggled for his life. And in the middle of that, Dan Miller actually took a fight to fight Michael Bisping, where he was beat in an unfortunate situation. But Jim and Dan, they'll fight anybody, anytime. Good character guys. And Jim took this fight against Joe Lauzon, who, you know, he's a very good fighter. I believe he's a winner of the Ultimate Fighter, if not a runner-up, but he definitely competed on the show. Both guys went out there and fought hard. It kind of turned around when Joe Lauzon opened up. He had nasty cuts opened up on him by Jim Miller. And the fans were really into Joe wanting to win. And, man, it was an incredible fight. Both guys fought their hearts out.
Well, in fact, fight of the night, it was awarded, right?
Absolutely, and deservingly. That or the main event, I mean, I can't argue with you, but honestly, some of the guys on the undercard, the bonuses were $65,000 for this show. So by the night, both guys got $65,000. So, I mean, that really helps out the guys a lot, you know, to be able to get that kind of bonus. These guys fought their heart out, though, an incredible fight. It was just an awesome fight.
you know, while you brought that up, let's discuss the bonuses. I was going to talk about that at the end here, but when you say the bonuses were $65,000, is that distributed to all the fighters that were, you know, decided to get bonuses, or is that each?
Well, you know, there's a lot of undisclosed bonuses at the UFC. Last year, I believe, or the year before, it was the year before that, Outside the Lines did a feature on fighter pay. And one of the things that they discuss is that these disclosed and undisclosed bonuses that the UFC gives kind of has a stranglehold on what the fighters are being paid. And that's a different topic for a different day. And honestly, I don't know what any fighter is making other than the disclosed amount they give the Nevada State Athletic Commission, which is not even a true number. But, the disclosed bonuses were $65,000, and for the fight of the night, both competitors get it. Knockout of the night, the guy who performed the knockout gets it. Wow. The submission of the night, the guy who performed the submission gets it. But it's definitely an incentive, because if you've watched The Ultimate Fighter or heard any interview with Dana White, he preaches that he wants good, exciting fights.
Mm-hmm.
He would rather you go out there and this is a story of the undercard when you had Max Holloway versus Leonard Garcia. These two guys stood and banged, hit each other in the face. I believe Leonard Garcia lost his fifth fight in a row. Honestly, a lot of guys get cut after three in a row, and Todd Duffy got cut after one loss. But Leonard goes out there every time, swings, puts on exciting fights that the fans will always remember. A couple of years ago, he had a Fight of the Year nominee against the Korean Zombie at a WEC show. If you go in there and fight, the company takes care of you. That's what they'd rather have than guys who sit around and, you know, have takedowns and win, which was two of the fights actually on the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm. Now, Miller, his record now 22-5. Where does he go from here?
Beating Joe Lauzon. I mean, even though Lauzon is coming off a loss, I believe, to Anthony Pettis. May be wrong about that, but Jim Miller increases his stock again. Like I said, he was right there in the 55 division. 55 division is probably the toughest weight class in the UFC.
Mm.
UFC just signed Strikeforce, because Strikeforce is folding, so they just signed Strikeforce champion Gilbert Melendez to a UFC contract, and rumors are that he's going to get the next title shot against Benson Henderson. Ben Henderson just defended his title against Nate Diaz, who actually beat Jim Miller to get his title shot. There are so many guys that are just so talented at this weight class, 155. If you see a 155 fight on a pay-per-view, the odds are good that it's going to be a good, really good fight.
One of the other featured fights of the night, Costa Philippou defeated Tim Bosch by a TKO. Alex, a third-round stoppage for Costa. Did you agree with it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I would have maybe stopped it earlier. Tim Bosch looked like he checked out to me in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
Tim Bosch, tough guy, big guy who dropped from 205 pounds, where honestly he wasn't much of anything, to 185, where he just looks like a monster in there.
Mm-hmm.
And he got – this fight was originally supposed to be against Chris Weidman, who is by some rankings the number one contender for the 185-pound title. I don't do rankings, but I would put him behind Michael Bisping and people I would give a shot to at 185 pounds. But Chris Weidman got injured, so Chris Weidman's training partner, Costas Philippou, took this fight. Bosch was hurt early and never really recovered, and honestly, I think he kind of gave up in the second round. But Costas Philippou had a good 2012. I believe he won three fights. This fight doesn't really change the landscape, though, of 185 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, Philippou now with a 5-fight win streak and an overall record of 12-2 with one new decision. What's his ceiling?
He's still an emerging fighter. I mean, he was a professional boxer. At what level, I don't know, but that's one of the things they tout him as, is a pro boxer who's learning the game. He trains with Ray Longo and Matt Serra up in New York, and that's where Chris Weidman trains, who's, like I said, one of the top 185-pound fighters. So it's kind of backlogged at 185 pounds. Anderson Silva is getting up there in age, only takes a couple of fights a year. Bisping will definitely demand the next title shot. And UFC has all but said that he will get it if he beats Vitor Belfort here in January. And, you know, Philippou is going to need to beat some other guys before I think people start taking him seriously. Bosch was coming off a win against Hector Lombard, who was a highly touted prospect from Bellator, who I believe won something like 22 fights in a row. But looking at Lombard's last fight against Usamar Paul Harris, He looked to be injured in that Bosch fight because he wasn't the same fighter, and it was a terribly boring fight. And Hector Lombard is an incredibly exciting fighter. So, long story short, Philip Prue's going to have to fight some more guys at the Tim Bosch and above level before I think people start taking him seriously as a title contender.
When we started talking about this show, Alex, you mentioned that there were a few fights you did not really enjoy. I read some negative reviews about the Yushin Okami versus Alan Belcher fight, Okami defeating Belcher via decision. I heard the crowd was a little restless during this one.
You know, and I mean, honestly, it's the same story of the Derek Brunson-Chris Leben fight. Yushin Okami came off a devastating loss, actually in January, to Tim Bosch, where he was winning the fight, and Bosch came back and knocked him out, I believe, in the third round. And Okami was affected by that because his previous fight was a loss to Anderson Silva. So Alan Belcher's coming off a big winning streak that expands a few years because he had actually injured his eye and had to have eye surgery. And we didn't know if he was ever going to fight again. Alan Belcher returns, and Yushin played it safe, I guess, to get another win under his belt. Kept Alan Belcher down, and also this was kind of a reprise of both men's UFC debuts. And neither guy really looked good, honestly. And the fight before that, Derek Brunson making his UFC debut, mm-hmm. Strikeforce fighter who actually this past September at a Strikeforce event in San Diego that I was at live, the Ronda Rousey-Sarah Coffman fight, Derek Brunson got knocked out viciously in the first round by Jacare Souza, who's an incredible prospect who UFC hasn't announced they signed yet, but as a Zuffa Strikeforce fighter, it's got to be assumed he's coming up. So I'm very excited to see Jacare at 185 pounds. But Derek Brunson was knocked out quickly by Jacare. Here he beats the returning Chris Leben, who Ultimate Fighter 1 contestant, one of the quote-unquote good old boys, I guess, of the UFC. UFC kind of has a golden class of fighters, Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner, Chris Leben, and Josh Koscheck, who kind of always promised to be kept around because their importance on the first season of Ultimate Fighter, which is credited as springboarding the company.
Mm-hmm.
Leben coming up, drug problems. Leben looked terrible. He looked great shape, but just fought a terrible fight. And Brunson, not wanting to lose his debut in the UFC, just controlled Leben in what led to an extremely boring fight.
Well, you mentioned how Brunson is a Strikeforce product. What does that do, Alex, for the confidence of others who are in Strikeforce moving into UFC?
Quite frankly, this is the thing that all these guys have been wanting. Strikeforce guys didn't have the ability to get bonuses because Strikeforce was a money-losing property to the UFC, which I believe UFC kept it because it prevented a smaller company from being able to get on Showtime and becoming an instant player with the credibility that Showtime Sports gives to a brand. So with the rise of Ronda Rousey, UFC is willing to give that up to be able to bring this phenomenal woman and this, in my opinion, one of the biggest sports stars, I believe, of the year. I mean, there's arguments to how big of a star she is. She isn't drawing huge numbers. But I see her everywhere, David. I see her in covers of magazines. I see her on Jim Rohn's Showtime show. This woman's a big deal. She's in her debut UFC fight in February.
Illustrated, yeah.
Absolutely. The cover of Sports Illustrated body issue, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of guys, yeah, I mean, these guys are all confident. I mean, these guys fight hard, train hard, and honestly, they probably train with a lot of UFC fighters as it is already. King Mo, for example, does a lot of training at the American Kickboxing Academy with Cain Velasquez, with Todd Duffy. So a lot of these guys know what level it takes to fight at the UFC. So a lot of these guys are prepared. Strikeforce was a fine company, just unfortunately couldn't get footing under it and overspent.
Well, you talk about, you know, Brunson, this being his debut, and I'm sure he was excited, but it is still remarkable how he came in as a replacement with only 8 days, basically, of preparation for this fight, and to come out and perform like he did. Does it say more about Brunson or more about Leben that he just wasn't prepared?
I think it says a lot about both. I mean, yeah. I will never discredit anyone who comes in after 8 days of preparation. You know, they try to show it to you during the build to all these fights, what these guys go through, but I don't think anyone really appreciates it unless they've kind of been through a regimented training process. I've been through a few myself, so I may not look at currently if you look at pictures of myself, but as an active duty Marine, I went through very regimented training for periods of time, and I could tell you that these guys, incredible sacrifices, Brunson after 8 days fighting a guy who'd been through a complete training camp and winning, that can't be understated, and that's maybe why he used the wrestling as much as he did. That's his bread and butter. I believe he was a Division II wrestler in college. So he went to his bread and butter because he knew he had to win this fight because it was a huge fight. But Chris Lieben, he looked in the best shape I've seen him in a while, but who knows what the future of Chris Lieben will be.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a sad story.
So all in all, though, it sounds like you guys had an excellent trip.
Excellent, excellent. And now I found out that they're running San Jose the Saturday after Cauliflower Alley, so it looks like that week in April will be a traveling week for me and a very exciting week as well because I want to do both events.
Mm-hmm.
So UFC on Fox 7 will be brought to you in San Jose, California at the Shark Tank, and which was actually Strikeforce's home for a long time. So it'll be very, very exciting.
I know one day I'd like to check out a UFC event in Vegas. I did go to the one when it was at the Verizon Center in Washington, D.C., and the show was great. The show was fantastic. Of course, you know, you don't get the excitement of being in Las Vegas. And so, MGM Grand in Vegas for a big heavyweight fight, that's great stuff.
World Wrestling Entertainment annually, and we're going to talk about this coming up, presents a show some people have heard of called WrestleMania every April. UFC, unfortunately, isn't able to produce a fight every year at a certain time that they want people to be interested in, but they're trying to do this in July now. They've developed this fan access type deal where you can go and meet the fighters, get autographs, buy merchandise, and this time they were lucky with it being UFC 148 this past July 4th weekend. They were able to have a huge fight in Chael Sonnen versus Anderson Silva. But lower level or high level mixed martial arts UFC fan wanted to attend an event, I would definitely tell them to mark down the calendars for July 4th because that's when the UFC is going to try to do the big one every year. And these things, you can't plan them out, but that's when they're going to try to do the big ones every year.
Well, let's turn our attention to WWE and what is now WrestleMania season. Alex, do you think that the WWE is riding a wave of momentum as we begin 2013, or are the returning stars like The Rock and Brock Lesnar needed to sell the Rumble and WrestleMania this year?
You know, I kind of don't agree with either statement. I kind of think that WWE has put themselves in a situation where now we're going to start taking it seriously.
Mm.
They're going against big competition that night in Alabama versus Notre Dame, which I believe will be one of the higher-rated national championship games since ESPN has had it. These are two high-profile programs,
yep.
And they're bringing out the big guns. The Rock is definitely going to be on there. They're having what was supposed to be the main event of the December pay-per-view, Ryback versus CM Punk in a TLC match. They're having that on that edition of Raw. So it'll be definitely very interesting to see what they do, but these two past weeks of Raw have been honestly terrible, David. Terrible, terrible, terrible. And they're kind of doing almost what I would consider like a reset here January 7th as they present that edition of Raw building to the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I wrote a column on this, too, that I think after WrestleMania, there's some up-and-down programming. I usually like SummerSlam. I feel like they devalued the Survivor Series as an important pay-per-view. And in some ways, we just tread water till we get to this point of the year. I really like the Royal Rumble, and I do like, you know, The Rock's involvement this year. I'll be interested to see what they do with Lesnar. I'm curious as to what they do with The Undertaker. I think that the next 3 to 4 months could be a lot of fun, but then I'm concerned about the malaise after that again.
Absolutely. It's like driving home after, I guess, a big event, which you will be doing literally, attending this year's WrestleMania in the New Jersey, New York area. Mm-hmm. Definitely going home after the big event, which WrestleMania will be. This is going to be a huge, one of the biggest WrestleManias I think they've ever put on. 30 for all intents and purposes is going to be the biggest WrestleMania. At least they're going to try to make it. But this was shaping up to be really big with all the WrestleCon in the area,
mm-hmm.
the WrestleMania itself with Brock Lesnar, Triple H, Rock, a lot of big superstars on the show. We don't even know what CM Punk's involvement theoretically is going to be yet on this big show. Very, very exciting times. But then there's May and Extreme Rules. So, you got to come down from something that huge. And I don't necessarily blame the company. You have to come down.
It is interesting how they rely on the stars here, it seems, to sell WrestleMania. But it can get in the way of building then other members of your roster. So even when you just said, you know, it should be big because of these guys, what about Ryback? What about John Cena? What about Randy Orton? What about the guys who are, you know, there 12 months? Are they getting a little pushed aside here? Certainly not John Cena, but some of them are, aren't they?
Absolutely. I'm certainly not John Cena, but definitely. I mean, you have from May till April to make some of these guys credible names. And then on top of that, you can bring in the biggest stars. Hey, listen, January 4th on Ustream, on iPay-Per-View, New Japan Pro Wrestling is presenting, quote-unquote, their WrestleMania of the Year, the Wrestle Kingdom. And they do that very thing where Tanahashi versus Okada is headlining. Okada was a guy they brought back last year at the Dome Show, and he's main eventing in a title shot against Tanahashi. Up and down, though, they have Aki Bono, Bob Sapp on the card, some big names in Japanese wrestling and fighting history. But they're on the undercard, you know, and the main event is going to be headlined by Tanahashi, who's the biggest star today in New Japan, and Okada, who's definitely an emerging star. Definitely up and down the card, new guys intermixed with old guys. It's definitely possible to pull this off. Unfortunately, WWE maybe relies a little bit too much on the Rocks and Lesnar's to carry the whole show when they could use them as a topping, if you will, to the amazing cake.
Well, you talk about returning stars. Sting now returning to TNA. Alex, he's 54 years old. How much does he really have left in the tank?
You know, I watched Impact tonight, and that'll give away when we record the show. If we haven't already by talking about the Fiesta.
If anyone's still listening.
Oh, man. You know, Ace and the Nates were having the big beat down in the cage match, and the camera missed Sting coming down the aisle. They didn't show him until he was right up on the cage. You know, you figure that would have been the moments you kind of either darken the lights or had the effects come on, the big music hit, Sting's big return. It was kind of terrible. He just did some bat shots, whatever. At 54, I mean, how much do we even still want to see a Sting in the ring? Can't we have Sting transition to a different part of his career where, you know, he's a featured character, but maybe not every week as a guy? I don't know. I don't know what else we can see out of Sting.
In some ways, 54 sounds ancient, but, you know, how old is Hulk Hogan? How old are Ric Flair? These guys just don't go away, do they?
You know, Ric Flair actually signed to do another match in All Japan Pro Wrestling. He's going to team with the great Muto against Fujinami and Senyata. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, like I said, in Japan, they do this every once in a while. But the, you know, guys like Hogan and guys like Sting, unfortunately, the company tries to anchor a lot of the programming around them, and instead of making them, like I said, just featured characters, because, hey, honestly, the fans love to see the old names. They definitely do. But and they get the biggest pops, David, obviously, because, I mean, you have to look at the level of investment we have in these characters. Hulk right. Hogan, I mean, how long has he been a part of our lives?
My whole life. I don't remember my life before him.
I mean, how many memories do you have as a kid of Spider-Man, and how many do you have of Hulk Hogan? I mean, Hulk Hogan's always going to get the big pops when he comes out, but a lot of promoters, Vince McMahon was guilty of this in 2002 when he tried to build the company around Hulk Hogan for a month, and he seemingly woke up and put the title back on Triple H. you know, I mean, you hear the big pops, and you're like, oh, man, this guy's going to take us to the promised land like it's 85, but unfortunately it's not 85 anymore, and you need to be focusing on your young talent. Like, at one point, Hogan was young talent. Sting was young talent.
Yep.
And make those the guys that in 25 years are going to, you know, pass the torch to the next group of guys. Because TNA isn't suffering from a lack of talent.
Yeah, that's something we've talked about here on the show. Listen, before we wrap tonight, Alex, my issue with Sting has always been that he's never had a run through WWE. Because I feel like he kind of cheated the fans a little bit out of some sensational matchups, whether it be The Undertaker or The Rock, whatever it would have been. Do you think that tarnishes Sting's legacy, or no one really cares?
Well, no, I don't think it tarnishes Sting's legacy so much, because Sting wasn't – I mean, you know, we can discuss all day what Sting was or wasn't the WCW, but in my opinion, I mean, he was a pushed act for 25 years, but he definitely didn't move numbers. I mean, he was the top guy in a dead promotion, and he was a – number three or four guy in the hottest promotion in the world at one point, the 1996 WCW, 1997 WCW. He headlined WCW's biggest pay-per-view, but that was against Hulk Hogan in a match that was terrible. And the rematch did terrible business, too. So it's kind of hard to place. Where do you place Sting? Because he was always such an important member of WCW, but honestly, he wasn't big in any measurable way. Other than fan reaction, I guess, sometimes.
Well, don't you think that he earned his own career by not going to WWE at some point and trying to get those big WrestleMania moments or to get, you know, some more gravity to his career, if you want?
You know, he'll always have that, though, to where he was the top guy at WCW. Yeah. And who knows what would have happened in WWE. I mean, this weekend I was reminded of Dusty Rhodes running WWF in 89. Through, I believe, 92, where Dusty Rhodes ended up being fired at the end of it by Vince McMahon. And he wore the polka dots. And years before that, which I find hilarious, that Ted DiBiase had a black manservant named Virgil, which that happens to be Dusty Rhodes' first name. You know, Sting was a top guy, but sometimes with top guys with the WWF, Vince tried to embarrass him and try to prove that they were never supposed to be top guys. So who knows what would have became of Sting's career if he would have went to WWF. He may have been pushed, but honestly, he may not have been. He probably had a fine career for himself. He made a lot of money. He's probably pretty happy with the decisions he made. But when you're ranking him as an all-time wrestler, I mean, you have to look at it critically. You have to look at it honestly. And he may not be up there.
There was a time I really liked him, and but it's been years and years and years since I ever turned on the TV saying, well, I hope Sting's on tonight.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely.
Hey, listen, I really want to thank you for the recap on UFC 155. It sounds like it was a great show and a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you. Like I said, I don't really get to talk mixed martial arts with too many people. I'll sometimes call up Todd Mark and just talk MMA with someone. But absolutely, I love fighting and I love pro wrestling. So, yeah, hopefully you didn't hear something different in my voice. That's always the concern with people when they're with different partners, is that you'll hear something different in their voice. That's from a scene in Chasing Amy, a movie by Kevin Smith. Yeah, I mean, hopefully you hear something different in my voice when I talked about MMA.
Listen, Alex, when I want to talk about, like, Eve versus Layla, you don't get as excited as you do when you talk about Velasquez and Dos Santos.
Absolutely. Yeah, if I steal up for us, like, I'm very excited this weekend, like I said, for the New Japan Dome Eye pay-per-view, which I will be ordering this one. I haven't ordered the last couple, but I will be ordering this one. I love their Dome shows. So I love pro wrestling, too.
Good.
I love MMA, too. I do.
Well, thanks again. That was great. And for those of you out there, don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, my name is David.
And this is MMA Alex. I mean, just Alex.
Hey, by the way, we always say about following the show on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
AlexGoff84, and same as my Facebook handle as well, AlexGoff84, and you can have access to my world.
Well, I may not even finish the show. I'm going to run and go do that right now. my Twitter is DLB19338. Check us out on Twitter. Thanks for listening to the show, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.